is the Monday Mindset Podcast, where we share things of interest to us and hopefully to you.
So let's get started with episode number 56. This week it's Terry's turn to share something with us. What have you got for us today, Terry?
Well, Daisy, I've been doing this a lot lately. Once I listen to someone being interviewed on something or check out their book or something, then I'll find other episodes too, just to kind of get some more on it. So this topic actually came up from one of my groups with the fasting method. A member of the community shared a podcast episode that he had listened to by this person. And so I started listening to some, and I think it's really helpful or an interesting thing for us to be thinking about. So this week, I wanted to talk about his interviews on two different podcasts. One is on a new podcast that I started listening to recently called The Jordan Harbinger Show.
Oh, I haven't checked that out yet. Yes, you told me about
that. It's so good. He's actually an attorney who has kind of left that life to have a podcast. And now he teaches people to build their base and their list and things, you know, from an entrepreneurial perspective. But he has a great podcast. He gets on great guests. I really like his show. And then I also found it on the School of Greatness. So on the Jordan Harbinger Show, it's episode 506 called Tim Grover, The Unforgiving Race to Greatness. And on the School of Greatness, it is episode 1111. The Mindset of World Champions with Tim Grover. So I had never heard of this person before, anything about it before this person, as I said, through my work brought it up. So Tim Grover is best known for his athletic training with Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Dwayne Wade, all really big name athletes here in the U.S. and thousands of athletes and business professionals. He's the CEO and founder of a business called Attack Athletics Incorporated and author of an international bestseller called Relentless, From Good to Great to Unstoppable, and now his newest book, Winning, The Unforgiving Race to Greatness. He appears around the world as a keynote speaker and consultant to business leaders and athletes and high achievers in every field. When I first listened to this and I was excited about it, I was thinking most of our listeners are not professional athletes, nor do they have the goals to become professional athletes. And many of them are not CEOs of companies and things. But I think this way of approaching things still applies for all of us. And it's really about being a winner in whatever you're focused on in your life, whether that means you want to have better family life or better career or better athletic performance, but being a winner. Again, it's kind of a collection. It wasn't, both of these interviews were not like a, here's what you do, step one, step two, step three. Mm-hmm. They're just really them discussing this kind of winner mentality. And actually what Tim Grover said at some point is that so many of the programs that people seek in order to achieve, we tend to get on the lazy side and say, just tell me what to do. What are the steps I have to, just tell me what to do.
Well, and to be fair, that's a system that a lot of entrepreneurs and teachers in this sphere suggest. They say, find someone who's successful at doing what you want to do and follow the steps that they took.
Absolutely.
There is a typical strategy that
absolutely
that is proposed, isn't it?
And he said that there just are things about that that kind of fall through because it's just teaching you to succeed based on those steps versus
for them
succeed based on learning how to think. So even if you're going to follow the steps in that process, you need to learn to think differently in order to truly succeed. Otherwise, it's going to be kind of limited. So it was this kind of conversation in both of these interviews that I listened to that really just sparked this interest for me.
Well, it's very fitting, isn't it, in the worlds we operate in. I always find that somewhat frustrating with people who just want those answers. You know, is this keto? Is this product okay? Is this, what do I do? You know, I really want for people to think for themselves, because once you have the building blocks and once you understand how they go together, you can work out any problem, can't you?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And again, you just said it, kind of based in this other realm that you and I work in, I think it's still about being winners at whatever it is we're doing. And oftentimes people just want, tell me what to do, I'll do it. And he, you know, he works with professional athletes and things. He said, people always say, just tell me what to do and I'll do it, until you actually tell them what to do.
Yeah, that's true.
And then they don't want to do it. The other piece that was just enjoyable in listening to them is, you know, he was the athletic trainer for Michael Jordan, one of the biggest names in basketball here in the U.S. And he tells just kind of a fun story about how he got to be his trainer. He was brand new. He was in his 20s. And he wrote a letter to all of the players for the Chicago Bulls basketball team, just seeing if he could get to work with any of them. There are 15 players on a team. He wrote 14 letters. And this was back in the 1980s. So there wasn't email and there couldn't text message them. So he wrote 14 letters. But he didn't bother writing one to Michael Jordan because he thought, he's not going to work with me. I've never worked with a professional athlete. This guy's not going to sign me. So he wrote to all the other guys. Well, Michael Jordan found his letter in a guy's locker and took it to the trainer of the team, the doctor of the team. And he said, hey, check this guy out. Tell me, what's he about? You know, maybe I'll work with him. So over a few months or so, they finally reached out to Tim Grover and said, hey, we've got a client for you. Meet him at this address on this day. He didn't even know who he was going to meet. So he shows up, ringing the doorbell. Finally, Michael Jordan comes to the door. He's like, okay, well.
Wow, yeah.
So he said, I want you just to tell me, what are you going to do? Tell me your philosophy. So they talked for like 45 minutes. And this is where he starts talking about this winner mindset that Michael Jordan has. Like, okay. Normally he had people that would be like, okay, that sounds good. I'm going to talk to a few other people and see what I like best. But Michael Jordan's always ready to go at one, like right away, ready to take action. He said, okay, show up tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock, we'll get started. So this guy didn't have anything ready. He had to like go and like create a gym basically overnight so that he could start working with Michael Jordan. He said, I'll give you 90 days. We'll give this a whirl. And he ended up being his trainer for 15 years.
Wow.
So just interesting, kind of fun story to listen to. But one of the things he said is that winners aren't looking for motivation. You know, so many people in their business life or career life, or as you and I talk about, like their nutrition or health aspect of their life or whatever it is, workout, they kind of say, you know, I'm just waiting to really get motivated. And he said, listen, that's for beginners. You need motivation to like get started. But he said, winners are focused on elevation, not motivation. It's about how to keep improving, how to up their game, how to become better. They're no longer waiting for motivation. And I liked that, the idea of just elevating your life, your approach to whatever it is that you're doing. He also talked about, of course, whatever you're pursuing, you're going to get knocked down sometimes. You're not going to succeed sometimes. And he said, listen, when you fall down, stay down for a bit. You know, in this world, everyone talks about jump back up. You know, when you fall down, just get back up again. And of course, that's, you know, kind of a mantra to keep going. But what he said is really, if you just get right back up again, you're going to keep doing the same thing that got you, you know, knocked down. He said, instead, stay down for a bit to reflect on what happened and how you got there so that you can get back in and approach things differently. And depending on what you're doing, that might mean you stay down for a few more seconds or a minute, or, you know, maybe you lost your business, you know, it went bankrupt or whatever. Stay down for a little while and figure out what happened. How did I get here? So that you don't go back in and recreate that. And then in one of the interviews, he said, even, you know, I think it might have been Lewis Howes talked about that, even with dating, how we kind of often will date a similar kind of person instead of take the time to really reflect on how did I get to this place and how do I want to do it differently. Now, one thing that he talked about that I struggled some with, because it's almost in complete contradiction to some of the things I've shared with you and some of the people that I follow, but I think in some way you can kind of blend these thoughts. But he said he thinks that we should not be driven by emotion, because emotion is, you know, it's kind of fickle, it drives us all over the place, and it requires, or it leads us to overthink things.
True.
And he said more that we should be driven by and make our decisions through thought, and that it's more about our mindset rather than being driven by emotions. And as I said, there are many people that I follow that use that as your first, that you should be paying attention to how you feel or how something feels. But one of the things he then talked about as far as being driven by emotions is he said it's not being driven by emotion or even really thought, but it's by energy. It's by the movement and the action forward. Energy should drive us. I think that's a part that I still have to kind of sit with and figure out a little bit more. So we talked about, you know, successful people, it's more about finding a way to think, and oftentimes it's thinking outside of the box, rather than, again, like I said earlier, than figuring out what steps to take to become successful. He and Lewis Howes were talking about that winning really involves almost becoming kind of obsessed with the things that you're working on. And I know for some people that means that they're going to be out of balance in their life. And I'll say a little bit more about that in a moment. But really the idea that it's not all about balance. You do have to focus on whichever area of your life in that moment that you are most wanting to succeed in. And they may kind of switch over time. But that winning often involves almost an obsessive kind of focus. You can't really half-ass it. You have to be committed to it. And then also maybe even negotiate with those around you. So let's say you're in a relationship and you're going to be really focused on your career for a while. To be able to say to them, look, I'm really focused on this for the next 2 years. Stick with me. You know, rather than just always feeling like you're kind of being pulled back and forth between focus on this and focus on this. But you may need to set some boundaries or negotiate boundaries with other people or other commitments in your life. So Lewis Howes asked him, you know, how do you stay focused when you want to quit, when you just don't want to keep pushing hard? How do you negotiate with your mind when you don't want to do what is necessary? And Tim Grover talked about basically it's kind of like a battlefield in your mind. And he talked about, you know, you have thoughts of fear, you have anxiety, thoughts of inadequacy. And he said when negative thoughts happen, you need a trigger to kind of get yourself out of it. And he used a demonstration. Unfortunately, I couldn't see it in listening, but he said, you know, when I of course I get negative thoughts still, but when a negative thought comes to me, in order to address it in the moment, I will just stop, physically stop in my tracks. And I assume he kind of motioned like to that thought, like pointing to the side, like, get out of here, so that he can keep going. And he said that everyone he works with, they have to find what it is for them that helps them shift. A mantra, a something that they do. He doesn't just give everyone the same one and say, here, apply this, but that we each have to find what we're going to say to ourselves or do when we need to stop, get that fear or that negative thought out of our way, and then keep going. So again, that success is about how you think rather than taking certain steps. And he said, think about successful people, some of the big successful people that we hear about in the news. And, you know, here in the US, one of the people you hear about all the time is Jeff Bezos or whatever from Amazon. Mm-hmm. He said, listen, when he started, everyone had doubts about his idea. You're going to do what? He's like, yeah, I'm going to start a business where anything you want, you can get it within a week. And everybody thought, that's stupid. That's not going to work. And then he did it. And then he said, oh, you know what? Now we're going to make it 2 days. We're going to make it even faster. Now, it, you know, here you can get everything, well, many things within a day of ordering and some the same day. If he had let other people's doubts become his own doubts, he would have stopped. Mm. So just kind of thinking about entrepreneurs, these successful athletes, if they had let anyone else's beliefs about them determine whether they pursued it or not, we would have far fewer successful people.
Mm. I guess where that obsessive quality mm-hmm. you were talking about, that's where that comes in, isn't it? Mm-hmm. If their focus and it's a real obsession for them, they're less likely to listen to those mm-hmm. detractors.
They talked about fear and doubt. And I thought this was kind of an interesting distinction that they made. So he said, basically, you can't let doubt make your decisions for you. It's always going to be there. And it needs to be the energy that pushes you forward. So he was talking in this way more about fear. It is natural for us to have fear. Doubting the outcome will defeat you, but it's okay to have fear about the process. And he talked about Michael Jordan used to say, why should I worry about the outcome of a shot I haven't even taken? And Tim Grover talked about in his own life and thinking about it, rather than worrying about the outcome of something, let's say I take the shot and it doesn't work. I don't make it. The outcome is not good. He said, I would rather have that than the regret of never having taken the shot. Mm. And he said that doubt is usually more about your fear of other people's assessments of you. And even though they talk about self-doubt, he said, you know, really often that comes from other people and you've learned to apply it to yourself.
Interesting.
So again, going back to those successful people, they had let other people's expectations or doubt shape their experience, they would have stopped. And interestingly, each of these three men in these two interviews, so Jordan Harbinger, he was an attorney and he was successful. He, you know, did great in law school and was successful. And then he said, I'm going to go do this podcast. And he started doing it on the side first. And all of his law school friends would say, dude, what are you doing? Stop. You're going to get fired. They're going to see that you're, you know, moonlighting and you're going to lose your job. So he had other people have doubts, but he had to stay kind of laser focused on what he wanted. And then Lewis House was a professional athlete, had an injury and some things that kind of sidetracked him. So he, 8 years ago, started School of Greatness, and it's been wildly successful. But when he first started talking about it, people say, well, what are you going to call it? He says, I'm going to call it the School of Greatness. I'm like, that's stupid. That doesn't even make sense. So again, if he had let other people's expectations or doubts interfere, he wouldn't have gotten where he is today. And Tim Grover, interestingly, he is an athletic trainer, as I said. I think his bachelor's is in exercise physiology and things. But when he finished undergrad, the expectation was medical school. And I think it may have been in the Jordan Harbinger interview he's talked about. He's like, you're Indian, right? And he said, yeah, I am. And the expectation in my family was you will be a doctor because that's what you will do. Mm. And so when he was finishing school, he, you know, had to be on that track and his father paid for him to take his entrance exams. And so he took it the first time and he didn't pass and or didn't do well enough. And his father said, that's okay. I already paid for you to retake it because he knew that Tim was going to not do well on it because he wasn't going to really try because it really wasn't his thing. So he did well on it. He actually got accepted into good medical schools, but then decided, I'm not going to do it. And in his world, you don't tell people you're going to go train professional athletes. Like, that is ridiculous. But that's what he wanted. That's what he saw for himself. And obviously, he's been super successful doing this. So I just really liked their conversations about that. And he said that fear is instinctive. It's natural. But fear is kind of it's a gift. It's like a pressure that keeps you having to push forward. And then doubt is created. And like I said, it's created by other people. And it causes you to start to panic and doubt that the outcome is possible. And then he and Lewis House talked about something that I guess is pretty common for athletes to think about. And they say is, if you're driven by fear, you play to win. And when you're driven by doubt, you play not to lose. And that approach has a great impact on how you do. When a team or an individual is playing just so they don't lose, out of that fear of losing, they have that doubt, they don't do as well. They, you know, they buckle under that pressure. But when they're just driven by fear of what's next, what's coming, they play to win. They play for the outcome they want, not the avoidance of the outcome they don't want. So I think that was an important distinction for me to listen to and think about. Obviously, I'm not a professional athlete, but to think about in other areas of my life.
No, absolutely. And I was just thinking when you said that, you don't ever say you fear yourself, but you often hear the phrase, you doubt yourself.
Mm-hmm. And the way you just said it, and I don't know that they said it this way, but I really like that because fearing the unknown is natural. Mm-hmm. And it can feel kind of daunting. But like they said, it can kind of drive us forward. But doubting yourself is doubting whether you have the ability, the whatever it is, to continue. That gets in your mind and will stop you each time.
Has a very different energy, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Just when you think of the words, you can feel a very different energy inside.
When I think of it, doubt just sounds more condemning.
Mm.
It's like on the little bit more to that side of it won't work. Here are the reasons why it won't work. Mm. Versus fear is like, I don't know. Let's see. It could go this way, could not. I don't know.
Yeah, it feels, it just has a very different energy and a very different direction. Fear feels like it's reaching outwards, where doubt feels like it's closing inwards.
Absolutely. And then just to kind of wrap that up, they then talked about just continuing to focus on what you want and prove it to yourself. Prove that that fear was okay and that your abilities are fine versus having to disprove the doubt.
Like you, I found that a little bit more difficult to get my head around this emotion versus thoughts. Well, not necessarily versus thoughts, but because I certainly feel that I'm often driven by emotion. But like you, I think we both often possibly even use that phrase, you know, how do you feel about this? How does this make you feel? And especially when it comes to, you know, diet and lifestyle, how do these things make you feel? How does this food make you feel? It's a lot of it is about feeling.
And again, I think if you think of some of the other discussions we've had, there is a piece that it's about the energy and different feelings. Again, if you go back to the Gabby Bernstein talk, I talked about this and some other people, that different emotions have a different vibrational level. So the energy of it is different. And so I think there is somehow, I think, a combination of thinking and feeling. But I really do agree with his point that sometimes we can get too bogged down in the feeling
and overthink it.
Absolutely.
It brought to my mind something that our mutual friend Kim Howerton was talking about. And she was saying how important it is, and this is again is in the keto sphere, but setting emotions aside and putting strategies in place, getting them practiced, getting them there in place for when emotions do start churning and holding you up. And because those are the dangerous times, aren't they, often when it comes to starting and sticking to something like keto, when emotions are heightened. And that's quite often when we, you know, reach for and grab those old quote unquote comfort foods. So it just made me think of that, of sort of separating the two and getting these very practical things in place to help you with that emotional side when it kicks in.
Absolutely. In one of the interviews, he talked about something that reminded me of a podcast episode you and I did a long time ago, early on, and gave an example of Michael Jordan. I guess this was known in the industry. Obviously, I don't follow professional basketball, so I don't know these stories and things, but that before a game, he would often go into the opponent's locker room and it would throw off the other players. You know, their coach would be up at the chalkboard writing out things, plays, and showing them things. And here comes Michael Jordan. And he would say, okay, which one of you is guarding me today? Oh, he is. So they were all a little bit starstruck. Michael Jordan's in the house. And he was only doing it to throw them off. Because instead of focusing on the game, they were focusing on him. They're focused on that he's in their locker room, whatever. So, you know, that effect took their head out of the game for a while. I don't remember who the guest was that we were talking about, but that idea, like, you could throw someone's golf game off by just saying, hey, you know, did you step off with that foot?
That's right. Yeah. But also, I can imagine with that, well, when you mentioned about the sort of starstruck, for the poor person who, the poor guy who was defending him, I can imagine the potential of some self-doubt coming in there. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, he's focused on me. He, mm-hmm. you know, he knows who I am. And you start second-guessing yourself.
Absolutely.
Because it's Michael Jordan.
Absolutely. So it was a mind game.
Mm.
So, you know, again, just another way to, he was laser-focused on what he needed to do and how to make that happen. They also talked about the idea of balance. And in both interviews, Tim talked a little bit about his philosophy and when he would kind of get new clients, whether it's a CEO or a professional athlete or whatnot. His philosophy is he is the guy who is focused on what to get out of how you're approaching things, what to not have in, to delete, rather than what to add. And he said oftentimes, when you're going to do something new or you want to elevate your game, everyone talks like, okay, you need to add this and you need to get this person on board and you need to have this. And he's the one that goes in and says, you know, maybe to a CEO, what's this person's role? Why do you need this? And he actually kind of streamlines things and takes out things rather than adding things. And that's a better way to create balance. He said, sometimes when people think about creating balance in their lives, he'll ask, okay, who wants zero happiness? No one. Or who wants zero success? No one. Who wants zero love? No one. And if you're trying to balance all of these things all of the time, you're going to lose them or compromise all of them. So if you're trying to do all of your different roles optimally all the time, you can't. And you're going to, again, either compromise important ones too much or just going to lose them all. So we talked a little bit about being all in whatever one you are doing at that time. Now, that doesn't mean if you're the CEO of the company, you don't take time for your family. But when you're focused on work, you're all in it. And when you're focused on family, you're all in it. So deleting things that are unimportant, he focused on deleting the inessential things and just keeping those things that are essential to your life, to your business, to your, you know, athletics, whatever it is. So again, just some mindset kinds of things, ways to think about success.
I've got to say, the thing that strikes me about that particular segment, it feels very male to me.
Uh-huh.
It feels very much like a luxury that, and this is a generalization, of course, mm-hmm. but a luxury that men can do that. If you were to say that to a woman, especially to a mother, mm-hmm. I bet she'd be giving you the eye at the moment. Doesn't feel like women can be that clear cut about things. Maybe sometimes, but
it's funny that you bring it up because I was thinking about it earlier in some other part I was saying, but then especially this, every client they talked about, at least the ones they kind of named, were male clients. Mm. And so also just wondering some of these things, how they fit differently, maybe especially this one. Another thing that they talk about a bit is the idea that the steps to get where you want to be are not always fun steps.
True, yeah.
So think about, you know, changing your health, changing, you know, how you're going to eat, exercising, becoming an athlete, elevating your game as an athlete, getting a promotion at work and elevating your level in that way. They're not always the fun things. And I guess this is a theme in the book. But the idea that we are so focused on being comfortable that we don't tolerate discomfort very well. And to really win, you have to be willing to accept some discomfort. Mm. It's not about being comfortable all along the way. And talked about, and again, this is a comment that he made that I bristled against a little bit, but I get what he means. He said, you know, it's about focusing on the outcome rather than having to love the process. You know, people who are professional athletes, they don't love 3 hours of training, but they're focused on the outcome. They're focused on the bigger goal. And I remember, I think I shared with you, Marissa Peer talks about when she wrote her first book and she was up at 2 a.m. writing her book and everyone else was sleeping. She thought, this sucks. I don't know if I want this. I'm not sleeping. I'm lonely and whatever. That she had to focus on, no, when tens of thousands of people are holding my book in their hands, this 2 a.m. is totally worth it.
Mm. It's interesting, isn't it? Depending on the context, how you can switch that both ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in other contexts, we'd be saying focus on the process, not the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
We've said that in episodes, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
But you can see in a different context, yeah, mm-hmm. focusing more on the outcome and less on the process because it's uncomfortable and it's not much fun at times.
I think for me, how do I say it? Let's say, for example, someone wants to lose 100 pounds and they're going to change how they're eating and they're going to exercise differently or something like that. Rather than focusing on the end result, when all you focus on is that 100-pound loss, that 100-pound loss, that 100-pound loss, and I'm only at 50 pounds, and this seems like it's never going to happen. In that way, I do agree that focusing on the outcome is a problem. But expecting that you're going to love the journey is not very realistic.
No.
But to know I am in a journey, and I'm working toward getting somewhere. And I don't have a way to say it better, but it's almost like being content with the journey, knowing that you're going to the destination, but not downplaying the journey or escaping the journey because it's unpleasant.
Mm.
You bring up a good point. This whole, both of these interviews or these talks had so many great pieces to them, but then certain topics that just kind of came up against my way of seeing things and believing. And I thought at one point about not sharing it then, because I'm like, oh, well, this is incongruent with how I really think about things and what I see. But I thought, no, we've got a wider audience than that. Some people, this is a message that will work even better for them. And I don't think they're so incongruent that, you know, but just that idea that for some people, keeping focused on where you're going is more important, or you said certain processes that might be more important, whereas there are other times when you need to learn to accept, enjoy, appreciate the steps of getting there.
Mm.
And that they don't have to be just contradictory statements. They can be different, like you said, for different applications.
And they can change too, can't they? I mean, the example you just used about losing 100 pounds, and that's your goal and that's what drives you, and you appreciate that a lot of steps that are in your way that are going to get you there are not going to be comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But that at some point you might reassess that goal. Because you might, you know, you might find that actually you start ending up healthier and happier at losing 90 pounds. Mm-hmm. And that 10 pounds becomes less important. So there's nothing to say that your goal can't change along the way. It is important to have one because it does give you that destination, doesn't it? It gives you the path to set out. It helps you figure out how to get there. It helps you figure mm-hmm. out the process. But there's nothing to say that you can't actually reassess that
mm-hmm.
along the way. And that's why it's kind of important to focus on the process.
Absolutely.
And be aware of what's going on and the enjoyable parts of it and the changes that are happening to you in that process.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to possibly reassess.
It also makes me think of another person who wrote something, I think that's in line with what we're describing right now, Malcolm Gladwell's book, Outliers.
Mm-hmm.
They talked about highly successful people, professional athletes, Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, people who were top of their game. And oftentimes we look at them and think, wow, they were just really good. Like they were just brilliant and that's why they got there. Or they were just violin proteges and that's how they got there. Or, you know, they just had the mind for computer programming that no one else did. But when you really listen to their stories, no, it's because that person practiced the violin 10,000 hours from the time they were a kid until they were 17 when they were in the symphony.
Mm.
Whereas I wanted to be really good, but I wanted to practice maybe a half hour a week. It didn't mean I, you know, who cares what my inherent skill level was. I didn't want to put in that time to develop it.
Mm.
Whereas the people who became highly successful at that put in great amount of time. So the process, they lived the process. I don't remember which person, whether it was Bill Gates or Steve Jobs or someone else in the computer industry, but when they were a teenager, they would go and volunteer at places so that they could sit and write code. They would break in basically to get more time sitting at those computers because everyone didn't have one in their home at the time so that they could learn what to do. They were so driven by it. But in that for them, I don't think they were driven by some end goal. They were just driven by figuring it out, learning more. They were engaged in the process,
mm-hmm.
but they spent thousands and thousands of hours writing computer code versus what some of us might think like, wow, they were just born geniuses and they just could mm-hmm. do this.
Yeah, it comes back again, doesn't it, to this laser focus and mm-hmm. obsessive quality.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So Daisy, I'm aware of our time and I think you and I could continue talking about this. And I still have some other things from these episodes that I want to share with you. So I'm going to put a pin in it here and we'll come back to it the next time it's my turn to share.
That sounds great. I love these conversations actually where something, you know, something does rub you up the wrong way because it gets you thinking about it, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
You know, it's lovely when you hear an episode about something that's completely in tune with the way you think. It's very enjoyable to listen to. But in some ways, these episodes that, just rankle a little bit, get the brain cells working a bit more. I like it. More of a challenge.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully there'll be more challenge the next time we talk about this.
I shall look forward to it. Well, have a very wonderful week. And I'll see you next time.
You too, Daisy. Have a great week, everybody.